Welcome to Scotuscast Mobile Sierra Non-Contracting Parties Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 13, 2010, the Supreme Court announced its decision in NRG Power Marketing versus Maine Public Utilities Commission. Under the court's Mobile Sierra doctrine, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, otherwise known as FERC, must presume that a wholesale electricity rate set by a freely negotiated wholesale energy contract meets the statutory just and reasonable requirements. The question in this case was whether the identity of a complainant affects the Mobile Sierra presumption. In an 8-1 opinion delivered by Justice Ginsburg, the court held that the Mobile Sierra presumption does not depend upon the identity of the complainant seeking investigation. The court reasoned that if FERC must presume a just and reasonable contract rate from fair arm's-length negotiations, non-contracting parties cannot escape that presumption. Furthermore, the Mobile Sierra doctrine does not neglect the interests of third parties because it directs FERC, notwithstanding the presumption, to reject a contract rate that seriously harms the consuming public. To discuss the case, we have Ashley C. Parrish, who is a partner at King & Spalding. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Parrish.
Hello, this is Ashley Parrish. I'm here to talk about the Supreme Court's decision this term in NRG Power Marketing LLC versus Maine Public Utilities Commission. Before discussing the NRG decision, I should note that I represented parties in this case while it was litigated before the Supreme Court. Whatever I say reflects only my own views and does not necessarily reflect the views of any of my clients. NRG is the latest in a line of Supreme Court decisions upholding the rule that except in extraordinary circumstances, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has no authority to modify freely negotiated fixed-price wholesale energy contracts. That rule, known as the Mobile Sierra Doctrine, originates in two Supreme Court cases decided in 1956. In those two landmark decisions, the court was asked to interpret provisions in the Federal Power Act and the similarly worded Natural Gas Act, granting the Commission authority to oversee the sale of electricity interstate commerce and requiring that all wholesale electricity rates must be, quote, just and reasonable, close quote. Under the Mobile Sierra Doctrine, the Supreme Court held that the Commission must presume that a rate set out in a freely negotiated wholesale energy contract meets the statutory just and reasonable standard, and that this presumption may be overcome only in extraordinary circumstances when the Commission concludes that the contract harms the public interest. In a subsequent 1958 decision, known as United Gas Pipeline Co. versus Memphis Light Gas and Water Division, the Supreme Court clarified that Mobile Sierra is a default rule that applies unless the contracting parties choose to opt out, thereby allowing the Commission, upon unilateral request by either party, to modify contract provisions even when modifications are not required in the public interest. A contract provision indicating the party's agreement to opt out of the Mobile Sierra regime is known as a Memphis Clause. 2 years ago, in 2008, the Supreme Court affirmed the Mobile Sierra Doctrine in Morgan Stanley Capital Group versus Public Utility District No. 1 of Snohomish County. The Supreme Court in Morgan Stanley reversed a decision from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit addressing challenges to energy contracts coming out of the California energy crisis. In deciding whether the contracts could be modified, the Ninth Circuit created a brand new approach, holding that the Mobile Sierra Doctrine applies only when the Commission has had an opportunity to review and pre-approve the contract rates, that the doctrine applies asymmetrically to protect only sellers and not buyers of energy who have negotiated rates to which they no longer wish to be bound, and that the Commission may modify contract rates whenever consumer electricity bills are affected and the rates fall outside a judicially crafted zone of reasonableness. The Supreme Court rejected the Ninth Circuit's policy innovations, concluding that the Ninth Circuit's novel approach would undermine the reasonable, stable, and reliable regulatory regime that Mobile Sierra was intended to protect. Long-term contracts are important tools for market participants to hedge against future market risk, and competitive markets will not work properly or efficiently if the Commission is free to interfere with contract arrangements. Accordingly, although the contracts were negotiated during the California energy crisis, which the Ninth Circuit characterized as a period of market dysfunction, the Supreme Court refused to carve out a new exception to the venerable Mobile Sierra Doctrine. That brings us to this year's NRG decision. NRG can be understood as rejecting another attempt to carve out an exception to the Mobile Sierra Doctrine. In particular, the Supreme Court granted review in NRG to consider a D.C. Circuit decision holding for the very first time that the Mobile Sierra Doctrine does not apply when a contract rate is being challenged by a non-contracting third party. Let me start with a few words on the facts behind NRG. NRG involved efforts by participants in the New England energy markets to reach agreement on a market structure for maintaining the reliability of the energy grid. In 2006, the Commission approved a settlement agreement that, most importantly for these purposes, established a rate-setting mechanism, an auction, through which parties would reach agreement on future sales of energy capacity in the New England market. Avoiding any argument that the contracts resulting from the auction process might be subject to a Memphis clause, the settlement included a provision making clear that those contracts would be subject to the usual mobile share presumption. Certain groups and entities that were not parties to the settlement appealed to the D.C. Circuit, seeking to overturn the Commission's order approving the settlement. The D.C. Circuit held that the Commission should not have approved the settlement, holding that mobile share does not apply to non-contracting parties. And in April 2009, the Supreme Court granted review. In an 8-1 decision written by Justice Ginsburg, the Supreme Court reversed. The court recognized that carving out a third-party exception to mobile share, which would open the door for challenges by consumers, advocacy groups, state utility commissions, elected officials, and others, would essentially gut the doctrine and undermine its essential purpose of maintaining contract stability. The court also recognized that the mobile share doctrine does not overlook third-party interests. Instead, it is actually designed to protect their interests by imposing important limits on the Commission's authority, ensuring that contract stability is the norm. The court then remanded to the D.C. Circuit to address an issue that had been raised but was not addressed by the lower court, namely whether the rates resulting from the auction process properly qualify as contract rates. It seems to me that there are perhaps four quick points that can be made about this decision. First, it's a very important decision, and it strikes me that the Supreme Court's decision is clearly correct. It is extremely important to the proper functioning of the nation's energy markets that the Commission not be allowed any general or vagrant authority to reformulate private contracts. The regulatory regime established under the Federal Power Act is built on a system of private contractual arrangements, and the mobile share doctrine is essential to maintaining stability and protecting the reasonable expectations of market participants. Indeed, it seems clear going back to the Morgan Stanley decision that the lack of contract stability in California was one of the significant causes of the California energy crisis. Second, even though the mobile share doctrine applies, this does not mean that the Commission does not have broad control or authority to regulate wholesale energy markets. It has broad authority to oversee regulated parties and to set the market rules that will apply to wholesale transactions. But once parties have negotiated contracts, those contracts must be respected. Third, it is interesting to note that although the Morgan Stanley decision drew a dissent from Justice Stevens, who was joined by Justice Souter, and a separate concurrence from Justice Ginsburg, by the time NRG came along, Justice Ginsburg's majority decision garnered the support of every justice except one, that is, Justice Stevens. Interestingly, Justice Stevens' dissent would require the Commission to exercise significant authority over contracts to protect the short-term interests of consumers at their own long-term expense. In essence, if rates were too high in any short term, Justice Stevens would say that it would be fine for the Commission to go ahead and modify the contracts. But of course, that would undermine long-term contract stability and result in long-term increases in consumer prices. Justice Stevens' approach would be a very different regime than how the current regulatory regime operates, and at least in my view, it would impose significant burdens and costs on consumers. Fourth, and this is the final point, as other contributors to these podcasts have noted, in many important cases, basically these middling cases where political issues are not explosive, the Supreme Court tends to decide these cases correctly and with a broad degree of unanimity among the justices. I think that's exactly what we've seen here, first in the Morgan Stanley decision, and then later in the NRG decision, affirming the mobile share doctrine.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.